What better way to start it off without saying, well, welcome to an episode of a gaming podcast, episode 20, actually. This is episode, unbelievable, yeah. 20 hey, episodes. Great look way. Look at us. Great hey, way to celebrate with the look Xbox developer direct event that just happened. We just finished recapping it. We're going to go through it on the podcast here. Give our thoughts, you know, impressions on all about it as well. And then we'll also dive into the thoughts of Prince of Persia. For those who played it, I'm hearing a lot of good things about the game. Rumor has it, I don't know. But Caboose, how you doing, my man?
Good, doing good. I'm glad we got to check out the Xbox showcase together. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking forward to chatting about it with you guys.
Hell yeah, hell yeah. And then Sammy, how are you?
Doing good, doing good. Saw some things that I liked, saw some okay. things that I'm like a little iffy about, so we'll talk about it.
That's a high-pitched tone there. I don't feel like it so much. All right.
Oh my god, it was so high for you that it cut off.
Yeah, perfect. Like, even better. Even
that was
better.
Something on my end. No, I was so scared.
The podcast heard it. That's all that matters, okay? Steve, okay. How about you?
I'm doing really well. I'm so excited. We just came off a great hour of content, and there's a lot to kind of unpack and discuss. Yeah, I'm glad to be here with y'all.
Well, why don't you take it away with what Obsidian has showed us? What were your thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, I coming into the Xbox Developer Direct, I was really excited for Avowed. I talked about it last week. I think that Obsidian's upcoming RPG is going to be slept on, and I think their latest trailer kind of really unpacked exactly what this game is. It's their version of a smaller, more tight-knit version of Skyrim, if you will, kind of like what Outer Wilds is to, you know, like the traditional Fallout game. So yeah, we got a chance to see, you know, the setting, some of the, like the characters, a lot of the decision making that's going to go into it. They really emphasize like, oh, you're going to be able to have some ownership over the story here, make some morally gray decisions that will have an impact on the world itself. And then of course the combat, which I think I'm only going to speak for me, was a real selling point there, where they're talking about, you know, just player agency and being able to choose from like a traditional bow and arrow, sword and shield, but then guns, huge development for us. We get to shoot lizards.
You get to shoot the lizards.
Shoot the lizards, take them down, but then also like dual wielding wands with like different elements.
That was cool.
It looks super cool. There was even like one part that they're talking about. You can like mix and match your weapon, like your loadouts, quote unquote, where they shot an enemy with like a freeze
magic gun.
Yeah, like no, like a freezing
the wand to freeze them,
and then they like charged up their them. Yeah, their sword to like stab them and shatter it. I was like, this is so cool and unique, and I think just overall seeing the game in the way that they kind of showed it off today, but then also capping it off by being like, no, you can look forward to it this year. We're targeting fall. That's an awesome way. Also, the key art, some of the best video game key art I think I've ever seen. I just want to commend whoever created that or the team that created that. That is next level, and I want that on a shirt or on a poster right behind me. I'll get rid of this Moon Knight one. Yeah. I'll get rid of the Moon Knight poster any day of the week. Give me that key art. Wow. It's swapped. Yeah.
I just threw it in our group chat right there. That's from the key art. That's from the press release, and it's absolutely fantastic.
Beautiful.
I feel like I can see someone get like a tattoo of that for some reason eventually down the road.
Don't tempt me. It's just gonna look really nice to have the physical copy of that game.
Yes, you know,
with that on the front. But yeah, I'm echoing what you're saying, Steve. I thought that was one of the biggest surprises for me for sure for the showcase. I'm definitely looking forward to getting my hands on that game. And yeah, the combat looks like really fluid, and the way you can like mix and match some things looks like a ton of fun. The choices look to be really important as well. They had a lot of focus into how like your choices are going to change the narrative, and I thought that was cool as well. And yeah, I was not expecting, like, I knew going into something like this that we were going to have swords and shields. I did not expect guns, and I was not expecting wands. So like that's what really like pulled me in. I was like, okay, like the magic element here seems to be something that like is really engaging and adds a lot to the combat. So I was super into it.
Yeah, no, yeah. I definitely agree as well. Just with how I didn't know what I was gonna expect coming into this, but the fact you could just swap and like you have a gun all of a sudden, and then you have a sword, and like the device, like just swap it out very easily. It seemed very fluid, and the combat is very unique. Go ahead, Sammy.
Well, I was just gonna say it's kind of like a little bit of like the Witcher itch, just like use a little bit of magic with the physical damage. Yep. But overall, I'm very visual and that world looked like amazing. So I'm just ready to explore it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not even just play it.
I liked too that they were showing like kind of like the contrast in areas. You know, sometimes you'll have like this beautiful, vibrant area and then other places will look a bit more dull or drab. Mm. Some places will look full of life. Some of them will look completely devoid of it. I thought that was like really interesting. It's going to add a lot to the exploration.
Yeah. One thing that they've talked about, not specifically during this direct, was that they wanted to create like an open world RPG that's not as vast as something like Skyrim. They're kind of focusing on depth versus like scale.
Right.
So I love the fact that now we can kind of contextualize that with what they did with Outer Worlds, where it is, okay, this is a 20 to 30 hour RPG. We're really going to concentrate on, you know, dialogue choices, the gameplay, rather than it being this sprawling 100 hour. Everything is kind of, you know, surface level. And that's not to take away from Skyrim or anything, or any of those like Starfield or anything like that. But I do appreciate that they're going to be like, okay, it's more contained. We get to focus on these elements like the world building and stuff like that. And also, I mean, we talked about it during our reacts, but like I've only kind of like dipped my toe into Pillars of Eternity, but knowing that it belongs in that universe and that it's kind of like the spinoff, there's tangential ties to that that interests me. I don't know how deep it's going to go or how deep it really is required to have, you know, previous knowledge, but I think that's cool that they're able to spin off their own franchise and then give it like a different name, act as like an entry point. So if people jump into Avowed and they're like, wow, I really love this universe, I love this. These characters and everything, how many people are then going to go into like the other games and kind of go into this like strategic RPG, this, you know, almost like Diablo-esque game.
Yeah,
it's interesting.
No, I kind of feel like this is also like a great game to sell on like the Outer Worlds too, because a lot of people
play it.
Like, I feel like that's the style of like the two are kind of similar besides like the whole with the swapping and the combat. That one's more like shooting and everything, but like the choices and like the choices you make that could impact your story, I feel like that's just like their bread and butter of style of games. And I feel like this one's kind of like marketing for like the like upcoming projects, or even previous projects as well. Do you think this is coming out in fall 2024 though?
Yeah, I don't see why not. It looks like it's a polished, vertical slice that we saw. I didn't really see any like hitches or anything concerning as far as like my expectations for the game. And I feel like if Xbox, you know, is teeing up all these games for the latter half of the year, I think Avowed is a great fall entry point.
Yeah,
especially when you think about, okay, what are we going to do to kind of sell Xbox Game Pass? What are we going to do to sell consoles and stuff like that this holiday season? I think Avowed is going to be one of those benchmarks.
Definitely, yeah. Definitely. Yeah, I don't see this being a problem for it to reach its like planned release window. I think it'll definitely hit that fall. And you know, like Steve was saying, this doesn't look like it's one of those Skyrim level, like the biggest game you've ever played in your entire life, but this will sure, at least we can hope, will sure to be consuming a good 30 hours of your time and be a solid 30 hours of your time. You know, like that's for a lot of people what they said about Outer Worlds. I didn't personally play it, but considering it's the same developer, I imagine that that's kind of the same vision that they have with all their games, and Avowed looks to be following that trend.
And we can't also forget that they are developing a sequel to Outer Worlds. They've already announced it in development. So plus they're working on Grounded. It like Obsidian is
busy.
For all intents and purposes, Xbox is Insomniac, where it's like, how are you guys even doing all this? It seems
you guys
are just everywhere.
Yeah.
They have a lot of ambition, which I really respect. And I mean, we were joking around about it, you and me, Marcel, during the direct. It's like, New Vegas 2, maybe like, with enough support.
Why not though? Like, remaster it, like
something.
Come on, you got to do something with that. Why not do it? You're in the same umbrella with Todd and everything. Just make it happen.
It's got to be a matter of like when rather than if. Like, I think this is like, there's no way that internally they haven't had this sort of conversation or discussion. But like you said, you know, they're working on Grounded. They got Outer Worlds 2 coming. They have Avowed now this year. So their plates are stacked pretty high. It's probably just a matter of like, okay, where does something like that, if we want to make it happen, fit into the schedule?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think team size wise, they're like, what, like 50, 80, like not more than 100 people.
Oh, really?
So, yeah. They're fairly small, I believe.
That's a little surprising, but I believe it. Yeah.
Hmm.
Interesting.
Interesting times. All right. Yeah. Next on the list is my anticipated game from Xbox, at least. Hellblade 2. Oh, Senua's Saga. Oh. Hellblade 2.
Hell yeah.
Who wants... You know what, Caboose, go right ahead. Because listen, take it away, my man. Take it away.
I mean, like, there were several instances while we were watching there where I was like, okay, can't look much better than this, right? Like, this is their money shot. And then it's just like, oh, like, I'm watching real life at this point. This is one of those games, similar to some of the games that have released, you know, in this latest generation for the PS5, where you look at it and you're like, okay, I get it now. I get why I understand the leap that we just took from the Xbox One PS4 era now into the Series X PS5 era. And this game, I mean, it's just one of the prettiest games I've ever seen, honestly. The visuals are intense and like, they're not necessarily like these beautiful saturated vistas you're looking at, but they look very raw and real. Yeah. And I thought that was great. And obviously as well, just like from what they were showcasing in terms of the development, that moment where they had some of the voice actors walking around the mic to give you that 3D spatial audio experience, I thought that was so cool. And obviously just conceptually, this is such an interesting game with a voice and something that they want to, like a story that they want to tell that's important, you know? And I think that's awesome. I'm really, really looking forward to the game. And everything that they showed there, I was very thoroughly impressed.
Yeah, yeah. I'm definitely scared and excited at the same time. Some of those scenes were horrific, but it, like in the best way possible.
Yeah, the pro and the con of it looking that real, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I was just sitting there like, very excited.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, when we talked about it and saw it at the Game Awards, I think a lot of us came out of it being like, okay, that was a great showcase. The live performance was great, but not having a date was kind of concerning. And something we talked about on the show and I brought up was that I just found it very interesting that every single time we saw the game, they refused to show us combat. I found that like the biggest red flag of the game, where I was like, this game looks so impressive. Obviously, it's atmospheric. Everything from like a production standpoint stands out, but why aren't they showing combat? And I'm still 50% concerned about it, only because I will say it, maybe we like go back and everything, but every time that they show like Senua hitting an enemy or something, it's dark, like very dark. There's even one where it's so dark that like the enemy is shrouded in like shadows. There's just something about it, and I kind of
agree as well. Like, especially the first one, like if you play the first Hellblade, it looked absolutely outstanding. I'm like, how is this even possible? And it was also a short game as well. And I feel like it was short for that experience because of just how impressive the game looked. So there was a lot of like tricks and like not quote unquote shortcuts, but like ways to make this game look and run as good as it was. Something had a lack. And I feel like they're kind of doing like maybe the same, like, because you look at this game, you're like, I can't tell if it's the actress walking or if this is actual gameplay.
Yeah,
you know, and that was the first thing that we saw with the first game, with the first gameplay from the Game Awards like years ago. I was like, was that really gameplay or was that CGI? Like people didn't know. And I feel like it's kind of the same boat as well, because this game was never like an intense combat game. And they kind of use those tricks as well. It's basically taking the experience of like the whole 3D and the mind tricks of what she's going through, how she's in like her experience in life, especially with dealing with psychosis and everything. So I feel like the combat part was never its strong point. So maybe it's going through the same thing again. So
and you could be 100% right. And to be honest, like at the end of the day, even if there's something a little janky with the combat or the animation of the combat, it's not the end of the world. I'm not really playing Hellblade for the combat. It's not God of War for that reason.
Yeah.
It's all about like the atmosphere. It's all about like creating like an uncomfortable experience and a great storytelling. I just thought it was worth pointing it out.
I agree as well, though. So yeah,
I thought it was very cool though that they did point out, hey, we want to make sure that we're creating like dynamic animations when you are in combat. They're talking about like, oh, if you interact with one enemy, that same animation to attack or to defend isn't going to be the same with the next enemy that you encounter. I thought that was really interesting. Of like, oh, you're going that in depth, but maybe that's just the point of like, there's so many like deep layer mechanics going into the combat that maybe they're just not ready to show it off yet. Something I noticed. Right.
I think this is an interesting concern to bring up. And I mean, now that you mention it, like, it's true. There wasn't definitely like anywhere near a focus on combat or how any of that works. But I think maybe, Marcel, what you're saying could be the case, right? We could see another shorter experience per what most people are used to with AAA titles.
Yeah.
And that
I believe the first one was like 4 hours, 5 hour-ish. It wasn't even that long.
Yeah, I think it was like a 10-hour experience if you do you do all the collectibles and stuff like that. Yeah.
So maybe in this instance, you know, we could see it bumped up to something like 10 or 15. And then with that being a shorter experience, you know, a lot of the trimmed fat then allows them to really go all out with the visuals, but hopefully that doesn't come as well at the sacrifice of combat, right? You want the game to still be a video game at the end of the day. Like, things can look really pretty, but if it doesn't play well, then what's all that for? So I guess, I'm with you, honestly. Now that you bring it up, I'm gonna try not to drink the Kool-Aid as much on how pretty it looks in hopes that it also plays really well.
Yeah. I mean, you bring up a great point about maybe its expansion in terms of like a gameplay length and everything. I mean, we know it far too well at this point that games are becoming way too expensive to create. You know, here's a 70-hour AAA mind-blowing experience that's a blockbuster. Like, I almost commend Ninja Theory to be like, okay, we're only going to make a 15-hour experience, but we're going to make it one of the most visually impressive and impactful experiences that you're going to have this generation.
Yeah. Well, more and more now too, I think a lot of people who play games these days don't, like, they aren't as excited about, oh, this game is going to be 6,000 hours, you know? A lot more people get amped about the idea that here's this really tight, perfectly paced 20-hour experience, you know? Like, a lot of people have issue when you look at something like God of War Ragnarok, right? The Ironwood section of the game.
Oh.
It takes up so much time. It completely halts the game. And if it was trimmed, then you have like a much faster paced, much like smoother experience. Then you look at something like Spider-Man 2, which is shorter than the first game, but is full throttle, right? Like, it never slows down. It never stops to let you breathe. And pretty much from the moment you get the symbiote suit in that game to the end of the game, it's nonstop, one surprise after another. And I think people are excited about games like that. Games that may necessarily, they may be shorter, but it's just a perfectly well-rounded experience from beginning to end. You don't feel bored and you feel that you've gotten your money's worth, right? It's like, okay, some days I want to go watch the 3.5-hour Killers of the Flower Moon, okay? Other days, I want my like hour and a half giant lizard, giant ape movie where they go fight other giant monsters. Yes. You know what I mean? Yep. Like, sometimes I want my tight hour and a half experience, and other times, I'll take my time and watch my 3.5-hour movie that may be a little slower.
Yeah. And it echoes exactly what we were talking about with Avowed, where it doesn't have to be as widespread as something like Starfield, where it is, oh, go explore 100 planets. Does it matter if every single one has something on it? No, but it's there. I like that it's giving players options.
I think we need to stop, and I don't necessarily mean us here. I mean just gamers need to stop like setting such massive expectations for every single AAA title that comes out these days, because it just makes these games unrealistic and it balloons those budgets to ridiculous heights, you know? So a game like Avowed, a game like Hellblade 2 are perfect examples of less is more, you know?
Yeah.
It's going to be good for like, oh, sorry, Marcel.
No, go ahead.
For the millennial crowd, like, we work all day, we get home, we may only have like an hour after bed.
Yes.
Like, we need a shorter length game. And I think this is going to be hugely successful if it is like shorter, just because people will have time to play it.
Or that's even like, you know, Steve, you're a writer, right? Like, you're reviewing some of these games.
Yeah.
You don't want there to be like 72 600-hour games that come out of the year, because you're pretty much glued to a screen.
Valhalla killed me. You love Assassin's Creed? Let's give you 100 hours of it.
Oh, and it's it's due tomorrow, by the way.
Oh, what? And that's probably why as well. Baldur's Gate 3 dropping in the summer, kind of away from a lot of other massive releases, was so good because it was during a time where people had a lot of time, and as well when there wasn't a huge catalog of games coming out surrounding it. So you can just say, okay, I'm going to sink my teeth into this crazy 100-hour plus experience.
Yeah. Absolutely. But you also have to be, if you're going to be a Baldur's Gate and have 100 hours, you have to be such a high quality, high caliber game that justifies those 100 hours.
Yes.
Because otherwise, you're going to end up with something like, again, I'm going to bring it up, Starfield, where a lot of people... No, you don't want there to be bloat, but like a lot of people were like, oh, I beat the game in 30 hours, but there's 100 hours of content here. I'm just not going to touch it.
Yep. 100%.
I was going to bring up with Hellblade when it first came out from Ninja Theory. This is before Microsoft even bought them. The game was actually like $32, which was, it was really, really cheap. And and I feel like when I'm going back with the whole combat thing now, now that I'm thinking about it a little bit more, and I feel like this game was always meant to be like an experience. It was like, like to sell you on like the 3D atmospheric like technology,
audio,
or audio, or like just like it's just there to tell a story. And I feel like it's a game that you can literally hand a controller to anyone and be like, here, enjoy this experience. And I feel like that this is pretty much the, they're just branching off from the first one, and maybe that's why that the combat's not as intense. If there is like a mode where like the combat's like you want with the difficulty, that'd be cool. But like I feel like that's another reason why the combat isn't as the strong point of it, is because it's meant to be a, like an experience where anyone can just pick up the controller and just try out the game basically. So and I'm actually curious to see where they price point this one as well, because like I said, the first one was $32, which by the way, you can pick it up for $3 right now on Steam. $3. If you have not played this game, play it now for sure.
Imagine walking into Ninja Theory with a gun and be like, I'm robbing you right now, blind. Like, I'm on all the cameras, I'm robbing you, and there's nothing you can do about it. That's what that sale is.
Yeah, that $3. I've never seen anything like that before. It's
crazy.
Wild. So
I'm literally, as you're talking, like hitting purchase.
Do it right
now. Played it, Sammy?
I've never played it. It's been in my backlog. It's been on my wish list for like years.
See, the beauty of it is that you by the time right we record our next episode, you could have beaten this entire game.
Oh, 100%. 100%. And I'm really happy that we also got a date for it as well. And I'm really happy the date is also really close as well, which May 21st. You can actually pre-install the game right now on your Xbox Game Pass right now. So if you wanted to,
really,
yeah.
So right now, I'm just checking. There is no competition in May. As of right now, there's really no other. As far as I can tell, I'm looking at Game Informer's 2024 calendar. There is no like confirmed game for May as of this point.
Okay.
Perfect.
So now they have all the chess pieces, and now everyone else kind of has to react. Do we go up against Hellblade? Do we move stuff around like internally?
Yeah.
Good position to be in if you're Xbox.
Really, really good.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, with the whole Xbox and like, I heard like this game's coming on PlayStation or Switch. Do you see Hellblade 2 eventually going to like the other systems? Because the other ones are on PlayStation and on Switch, actually, believe it or not. Yeah. This game's actually on the Switch.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. All of those deals were completed before Xbox acquired Ninja Theory. I mean, I'm trying to go back all those years, but I think it came out for PlayStation first.
Yeah, it came for PlayStation first and on PC, and then eventually reached out to
Xbox.
And then when they got Ninja Theory, it came out to the Switch.
Right. Yeah. So part of me says there's a possibility, just because, you know, they've been very vague in their rule set of like, oh, if it has like a history on this other console, we'll bring a game over just to keep that lineage and everything. Personally, if I'm Phil Spencer and Xbox, I keep this exclusive. I mean, this is right now like their marquee spring 2024 game. It has the polish, the everything just that everyone wants from Xbox, if you know what I mean. Like it's the third person action adventure game that PlayStation has in tenfold, and I think that if you're Xbox and you want to replicate that even slightest, you keep this tighten it to the vest and just say, hey, you played Hellblade on PlayStation. Now come play the sequel over here in our playground. You guys sign up for Xbox Game Pass on your PC or buy an Xbox just to get to the sequel instead of, you know, handing it over. But yeah. I'm not Phil.
See, that would make sense, but I don't want that to be true because I'm a PlayStation person. So like I'll give you a year, give Xbox a year, and then I'd be like, all right, now it's our turn.
Do the Final Fantasy deal, you know, give it a year and then right. show up everywhere else. Now, is this only Xbox Game Pass? It looks like. I'd be really surprised on that, actually.
Yeah. You mean like instead of PC Game Pass?
Yeah, it's not like Game Pass Ultimate. It looks like it's just Xbox Game Pass because it says pre-install on Xbox Game Pass. Usually it would just say on pre-install on Game Pass.
I mean, Google says Microsoft Windows, so I think it will be available for PC.
Maybe. Yeah, I don't know.
Huh. Oh, well, that's a new
look. It better be.
Listen, yeah, you got the other game for $3, all right? You're already winning. all right, chat. I'm not chat. I'm thinking I'm streaming. I have a vision coming in. Vision of Mana. Lame joke there. I know.
You really did, though.
I had no idea. It just looked like, I was like, oh, Vision of Mana. I'm like, I thought they already announced that game, but it's
there's really, just there's just so game? Many of them. There's yeah, so yeah, many. There's a lot of them.
Yeah. This is just another example of Microsoft and Xbox trying to dive into the Japanese market. So this is really like Vision of Mana is like a really big series. It's like it's as big as like Dragon Quest. Like Dragon Quest, like, you know, you might hear about it here on our side, but like in the Japanese side, like they go insane. Like it's absolutely nuts how like this lineups for the latest Dragon Quest game. And Vision of Mana is pretty much in the same boat as well. So this is just Xbox trying to, I believe, just win them over. I don't know if this is like an exclusive, or like I had to look this up for a minute here. I feel like this came out already.
I don't believe so.
Like I feel like this already came out.
That's no, this is coming out this year.
Oh, this year. Okay.
This is the one that I'm pretty sure was at the Game Awards. They had some sort of trailer. Unless I'm mistaken. So but it doesn't have a release date.
It is coming on PlayStation and Steam.
Yeah.
So I guess this is like the first time it's just coming to Xbox.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, this definitely was shown during the Game Awards or sometime around it.
It was.
But with only like a PlayStation PC kind of tease.
Okay. Well, there you have
it. So this was them saying it's coming to Xbox now.
And it's their first time.
Cool. I mean, cool. Not a game for me. I'm not into the series. I'm not into the genre. But that being said, I mean, the nice thing is that we're seeing Xbox continue to kind of rally these Japanese developers to get games onto their platform, especially meaningful ones like the Mana series. They're doing stuff with Square Enix, getting a backlog of games onto Xbox Game Pass, the Yakuza series, stuff like that. There was a time when, you know, Xbox had a division with Japanese developers. It was just kind of, you know, touch and go for a long time. But now that we see Square and, you know, other studios now kind of investing in Xbox, it's nice. It's good. It's good for the player base.
Speaking of Yakuza, the guy presenting the game with like,
oh, my God.
He looked fresh.
My God.
I thought he got a Game Pass check, but the game's not coming on Game Pass, so I'm really surprised. I'm like, wow, this guy's fresh.
Guess not.
Yeah. But yeah, like that's really cool. Like, great for them to dive into the market. I'm actually quite surprised the game isn't coming on Game Pass, because I thought maybe that was like their way of like to help really get ahead of the Japanese market. Yeah. But like so.
Can't have them all.
Can't have them all, you know?
Although, I mean, you talked about it in the direct. Maybe they do some sort of like backlog thing where it's like, hey, catch up with the Mana series here. We're going to drop like five, you know, classic games going all the way back. But I don't know. Yeah. I don't know how the licensing works.
Yeah. And that one is launching in the summer of 2024. Then we got Aura History Untold. Sammy, you never finished a Civ type of game before. Would you be diving into this one?
Dude, I have a lot of friends who's like, that's their style of game, and I'll play with them. But like, I've been in like 16 hour Civ games where like you literally just like go to sleep, wake up and be like, oh, it's your turn. I like that they've condensed the gameplay and like you don't just sit there for several hours per turn. So I'll try it out. It looks kind of cool. It would be like a fun game night. So I think it'll just be like, what's the board game Catan?
Yes.
Maybe it'll be like more Sellers, like faster pace like that. So I'm here for it. I'll try it.
I know Steve wants his mechs though in the game. So
yeah, I got to see more mech gameplay. If this is kind of like if they give me some armored core vibes here, I'm definitely
then down. You're all in.
Yeah, just like I'll speed run all like the boring, you know, history stuff just to get me to like the future mech stuff, building and all that. But otherwise, honestly, this game doesn't really do anything for me. I've dabbled with Civ and stuff like that. It's fine for like an hour or two, but I've never been like fully committed into playing one of those games. I'm just not a strategic kind of overhead person.
Yeah, I'm the same way.
I'm the same way as well. I've played like I can't remember the name of it, but I remember like the villagers got mad at me and like half of them just left. I was like, I need people to run this town. Come back. What are you doing? You know, and then a plague came by and I was like, I give up. So
the only management sim kind of game like that, Roller Coaster Tycoon. Where's Roller Coaster Tycoon?
Right? Because
if we can get a new one on PC, sign me up for that.
I have a friend who still plays like his disc that he got in the cereal box. And he's he emails the developers and I'm like, you're never going to get a response. Like they're never.
Do you imagine like one day he just opens up his inbox and they're like, sup?
Jesus.
You still playing?
I heard you need help. Yeah. Oh my gosh. And then the grand finale, Indiana Jones and the Great Circle, launching this year, which surprised a lot of us.
I was not expecting it to drop this year.
Caboose, why don't you kick us off with some Indiana Jones and the Great Circle, sir?
Yeah, I mean, there's some stuff about it that I'm like, oh, that looks really great. I think the puzzle mechanics look awesome, and I think I'm glad as well that there's such a huge focus on puzzles. I think they mentioned that some of them are even optional. Some of them you'll have to like stumble upon to even like start doing them. I think that's cool. Really adds to the exploration. Really adds to the vibe and the feel of what would be playing as Indiana Jones. Visually it looked a little weird to me. Sometimes it looked really good, sometimes it's, you know, beautiful and felt very indie, but you know, other times I was like not sure about it. Steve, you mentioned to me that this is kind of the same art style as Wolfenstein. So I think that that's where I'm like going to be a bit more lenient, because if that's just the way that they make their games look, then I understand. And I feel like maybe some people should have expected it, I guess, going in, considering it's the same developers of the Wolfenstein series.
I just want to pop in and just say, I do agree that there are some certain scenes that don't align
look
with
a little
that.
Weird.
There's the one where like he pulls someone in and like punches them, his hat goes flying. I was like, that guy looks like stiff as cardboard. Yeah.
Very janky sometimes.
So some of the latter stuff, I was way more confident in saying like, that's Machine Games is like MO, that's their vision and stuff like that. But I do agree. Some rough edges there.
Yeah. And then I think as well, like the general vibe from everyone here is that we all kind of wish that this was like a third person adventure. You know, especially when you're playing as such an iconic character like Indiana Jones, you want to see the character kind of at all times. You know, you want to see the iconic look, and maybe obviously there could be some things there in terms of alternate skins and stuff like that from the movies or different kinds of looks that you can give the character. Not that there's like many different looks that he's had in the movies. He's generally looked the same. But if there was some sort of way that they can add a layer of customization, just so that when you're looking at the character, you're like, oh yeah, that's Indy from this one scene from that one movie, you know, or whatever it might be. I think that would have been cool. Just in general, I think playing in first person is not what I would have wanted out of an Indiana Jones game, but I'm going to give it a fair shake because it does look like a decent amount of fun. And I think the developers have sort of grasped the concept of what an Indiana Jones game could feel like in terms of in your hands. So I'm looking forward to it. I mean, Tony Todd popping up in there. I was not expecting that. I thought that was cool. I'm looking forward to seeing what his role is going to be like in the game. And then obviously as well, you know, it's not Harrison Ford's voice. It is his likeness. Mm-hmm. So they're going with that. They're not just doing some completely different. But we all don't know for sure who's doing the voice.
Yes, we do.
Oh, do
and
we?
Ladies and gentlemen, Steve was right.
Got it.
Oh! Troy Baker is Indiana Jones. These ears, they... they don't set me off wrong.
Yeah,
like,
let's go.
Mile away. And also, I could just pinpoint, like, throw a dart at any game and be like, yeah, Troy's in that. And I'd probably be right.
Yeah. It was an easy layup. Chance. Yeah.
That's awesome.
But I think we agree, like, we understand why people would want Harrison Ford to voice it, but it was a good decision.
It was unrealistic to think that that's what they were going to go for. Yeah. I mean, this is already probably such a massive budget game. Hiring Harrison Ford to do the voice for what is potentially like a 20, 25 hour game is a tall ask. And then as well, you know, considering this is meant to take place between the second and the third film.
Right.
Harrison Ford, he's an older guy. He sounds older. It just made more sense for them to hire somebody that can kind of imitate what a younger Harrison Ford sounded like. And I think Troy Baker's doing a good job.
He did a good job,
very good. I think it's fine. It doesn't sound too jarring to me. And it didn't pull me out.
No, I mean, it was a little jarring that first scene where you see his, like, Harrison's face and then the voice comes out and you're like, wait a minute, that doesn't compute. But then you slowly acclimate and everything like that. So to me, when we first, like, the camera pans over and we see Harrison's face, I was like, I didn't even think, oh yeah, they're just going to replicate him. Like, I was expecting like a brand new character model. This was going to be far removed from the movies and stuff like that. So to see them actually come in and say, we're going to use Harrison's likeness, I'm pretty stoked on that, just because that is the character. I would have been a little less impressed or like less excited if it was like, oh, it's just a generic white dude like that has no ties, or better yet, when they were like hiding his face, I was like, oh, are they just gonna do that the entire game? Like, we're never gonna see who Harrison is. Like, hey everyone, you're Indiana Jones, go on this nice adventure. I was like, I'm not really behind that. So to kind of know, hey, they're actually rooting this in the series, it's taking place in between the second and third movie, that's awesome in my opinion. But a lot to get excited about. But I do agree with you, Caboose, that the start of this kind of showcase, I think, showed a lot of like the rougher edges of this game. I think, just some of the combat there, some of the animation style, it's very weird. Maybe it's just the lighting. Maybe it's just, hey, we don't know how many more months they have to really polish this up. But then, you know, flash forward to some of the later stuff. There's one scene where he walks in, there's like all these like different pieces of historical. Yeah. And I was like, oh my God, the lighting is on point. And maybe that's just the, or he's like rappelling up the side of a wall and it's a darker scene, but the shadows look great. The lighting looks great. So I have faith in them.
I'm also just confused, like, why it pulls back to third person when you're like climbing up something or like
because of Harrison Ford. I guarantee.
Yeah, but wouldn't that be where, like, I mean, if it's like a 20-hour game and there's cutscenes and this and that, like, aren't you getting enough of Harrison Ford out of that at that point? Because when you're going down a zip line, you're not really swinging the camera around to see Harrison Ford. You're looking at his back. So I just found that, like, it's just, for me, it's just really weird.
I was kind of wondering if they just wanted to kind of make this game different from, you know, the Uncharted and Tomb Raider as well.
Right.
Because, like, that's where a lot of people are like, oh, well, this is this going to be, like, a lot of people were, like, already speculating, is it going to be, like, a Tomb Raider type of, like, Indiana Jones game or, like, an Uncharted type of game? And maybe this is just, like, well, like, let's just make it our own way of, like, this different, like, first person with a third person view of with different actions. I don't really need to see myself climbing up a ladder, basically. Like, I don't know, but
My read on it is, I think a lot of it is baked in. Hey, we have Harrison Ford. We want to showcase him as much as possible because we are creating this model and all that. The other thing is, and someone out there can fact check me and all that, but I struggle to think back to any of the Wolfenstein games in which, aside from maybe the odd ladder, you're not really rappelling, you're not really doing these movements that would warrant a third person perspective. Mm-hmm. So I do wonder if it came down to machine games, like, actually being like, okay, so wait, in this game, we're going to be climbing up a wall. What do we do? Because we've never put this animation into any of our games before. And someone, like the creative team, was like, oh, what if we just pull back? Maybe that's the way to get around this, because they've never done that in Wolfenstein, as far as I'm concerned or remember, because it's usually kind of like a spiritual offshoot of like Doom and everything. It's more of like a run and gun kind of game. You're not really climbing over obstacles. You're not really traversing all that much. Mm-hmm. So I do wonder if this is just a brand new kind of venture for the studio, and they're like, well, we don't really we have nothing to fall back on. Let's just create something new. And it just so happened, hey, we're going to dabble in some third person, which could lead to something very exciting down the road where they're like, hey, maybe right. we could do a purely third person game.
Imagine yeah. it yeah. was just that they went back and forth because they had to pay Harrison more per
maybe,
like,
yeah.
so like, you know, all right,
that's an
this.
Interesting theory. That's an interesting theory.
I wouldn't put it past them.
I just look at the instance of like the Blade game, right? Being developed by Arcane Leone, yeah. more famously known for making first person games as well, but mm-hmm. they're instead just switching straight to third person mm-hmm. for Blade. I feel like it would have really benefited the Indiana Jones game a lot if they just had machine games just go straight to like, okay, let's just figure out how we can do third person. Mm-hmm. Because again, I think it would have worked better for Indiana Jones. Yeah. But other than that, like, I don't want to harp on the game too much. Like, no. I do think it looks like a decent amount of fun. The story looks interesting. There's a lot of love for the franchise, either from the developers working at the studio or Todd Howard himself, which is always a good thing to see, or at least to hear. Hopefully they just execute it right and it ends up being as good as they hope and as we hope.
Yeah. Now, with this list that came out today, I'm going to ask a very bold question here. If this is all that Xbox brings out, what would you grade Xbox year?
Ooh, that's a tough question.
If this is all, and if they come out and they're all like 80s to 90s, this is a banger year. One of the strongest. Solid. Yeah. I'd say one of the strongest ever, in my opinion.
Because, and like,
I think
I was gonna just say like just for like as for Xbox games only, like because like last year it was Redfall,
yeah, Starfield, Hi-Fi Rush.
Yeah. So it was just
Minecraft games. Legends.
Minecraft, yeah.
There was Forza. There was Forza, yeah, and then there Forza. Was not Civ. What was the other one? Oh man,
can't think of it.
I'd still
say that's a solid year. Sure. I mean, Redfall's obviously a critical blunder, but I mean, Forza, Starfield, like those are some pretty big games. I mean, and then the Hi-Fi Rush was one of the biggest surprises that year. Even got nominated and won some awards at the Game Awards, which is nice. But yeah, as Steve was saying, like if we have Hellblade come out in May and it's like a Game of the Year contender. And then we have Indiana Jones come out and people are like, oh, no, this is actually pretty great. Mm-hmm. And then what else do we have? Avowed, which ends up being another like surprise for the fall season. Then I think this will be a really solid year, like a really, really good year for Xbox.
Yeah. And I think after the year we had last year, like we're also fatigued from like all these releases. So I think it's good if they like kind of slow it down.
Yeah.
Give us quality versus quantity.
100%.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah, because I mean, if we remove, you know, Visions of Mana out of the equation, which was summer, I mean, you can kind of see like a trajectory where it is May, you get Hellblade. Right after that, you get some sort of E3 style game showcase. Here's, you know, diving deeper into Avowed and Indiana Jones and stuff like that. Maybe delay Indiana Jones. Who knows? because I'm still shocked that they're
going to be
crazy. But then they set up like a pretty solid fall lineup where it is, you know, you can imagine maybe Avowed in, or maybe are in September, Avowed in October, and then end off the year November, hit Indiana Jones right before the Game Award nomination stop. Like that's, if they could nail that like 3 months in a row with like solid Xbox first party games, that's a great way to end the fall period. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Not to mention all the other like second and third party partnerships.
Absolutely.
That'll undoubtedly come throughout the year. Like it's a good year if they can really execute. And that's the big thing. After, you know, Redfall was, you know, kind of, we said a blunder, a misstep, and then Starfield, what's a great game. I love Starfield, but I don't think it had the stickiness that Bethesda was kind of aiming for. But yeah, they're off to a great start. And I think kicking the year off, setting these expectations of, okay, we're not putting dates on every single one of these games. We just want to give windows. That way you can, you know, kind of see what the roadmap is for Xbox. That's a great way to start the year off.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we'll have to wait and see. And at least their strong one is we have a date for that, which is Senua's Hellblade, which I believe it's only coming on the Xbox Game Pass. I'm looking at it. I looked it up a little bit more. Like I think it's
okay.
Like, I don't think it's even coming on Xbox PC. I think it's
better.
I think it's like it's a Steam thing only.
I'm invested now. I paid my $3 to play the first one.
I mean, it's coming on. It's coming on Steam. It's gonna be on Steam, but it's not gonna be on like Xbox like Game Pass for PC. I mean, I think it's just a Game Pass for Xbox. So,
oh, interesting here. Developments. Senua's Saga Hellblade 2 digital only and will cost $50.
Oh wow!
Being reported by Insider Gaming. Physical
copy.
Yeah.
So it'll be another Alan Wake 2 situation, I guess.
Yeah. Oh, this is confirmed on the Xbox Wire.
Now, they said, can you guys, releasing a game digital only, does that save on production costs? Is that the reason why something like Alan Wake 2 went that route and why Hellblade 2 might be doing the same?
I don't think that they ever came out and said why, but assumedly, yes. That's the assumption?
Okay. Yeah. Because, or, I mean, that leans into what we're talking about for a game like Hellblade, right?
Yeah.
Like where they're trying to save as much of the budget for on like things like game length, or in this case, I guess releasing a physical copy of the game, to instead inject that budget into visuals and obviously the performance capture and things like that.
Right. Yeah. The other kind of slightly more maybe nefarious reasoning is to get rid of secondhand copies, which like say you sell your copy of Hellblade, Microsoft doesn't see any dollar value out of that. If you go back to EB and you're like, here, I'll trade this in for something. If you just get rid of the middleman, hey, every single copy of Hellblade that's being sold outside of Xbox Game Pass is money for Xbox. They're getting the full amount there.
See, if that's a part of their, like if that's a large part of the reasoning, that scares me just for the future of
Of course.
Physical sales.
Look at game, which is like EB, but in the, in the UK, they're not taking any trade-ins anymore whatsoever.
So, I mean, and then, you know, you got Best Buy and Walmart getting rid of so physical media.
You know, and it's sad because I mean, I just said earlier, like Avowed, that key art is so nice. I'd love to have the physical disc just to have that key art be something that's in my collection.
Yeah,
you know, and we're slowly heading towards a territory where that's just not going to be the case anymore. I mean, even Starfield, I got the collector's edition from Bethesda for that game. The steelbook is beautiful. I love the steelbook. And inside, it comes with probably, for me, the best compromise of not having an actual disc inside a steelbook. It comes with this like key that has...
Oh, that's right. Yeah,
that was so cool.
Which is nice, but also like scares me because like they might think that, oh, like here's this alternative of not having an actual disc when I still want the disc, you know, and it's mainly just for the sake of, I don't want there to be a day where I don't own the game that I bought. You know, I don't want there to be a time where that thing that I spent my money on no longer is my reserved right to own. Because who knows if like 10, 15 years from now, I wanted to pop in Avowed into my old Series X and be like, oh, let me just jump back in and try this out again, right? Because that's what we do, right? How many times, how many instances have you ever had in your life where you're like, let me just jump back onto my PS2 really quick or my original Xbox. I want to throw this game in there, right, and play it, right? Like, so I don't like that that's the kind of direction that we're going in. I know a lot of people don't like it as well, but I guess money talks at the end
they
of the day.
They could go like the Larian Studio where they do have the physical copy, but like just limited edition, and it comes with like a whole bunch of cool stuff.
Right.
So yeah. That'll be like
that would be nice. Format. Maybe. Yeah. I also don't want physical editions of a game to become like
a rarity.
Yeah. Just a piece of paper. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, sadly, I think we've talked about this where I do foresee a future where it does become kind of the limited run games kind of thing where it is, oh, it's more of a boutique purchase rather than, hey, we're just going to go out to, you know, Best Buy and pick up a game or EB or something.
I mean,
like that.
If Alan Wake 2 is selling really well, if Hellblade 2 ends up selling really well, then for these guys, it's just going to be like the proof that they can do that.
That's the thing, though. I mean, Alan Wake 2 didn't sell well.
Oh, it didn't.
No.
But this is these are sales that had come out pre Game Awards when there was just like an insane amount of buzz. No.
Correct. In that time of
would you think that maybe there is a boost there because of how much praise it's gotten since?
I mean, think that sale helped them out a lot, probably. Yeah. If anything.
And then also it, this is Epic Games exclusive, correct?
That's the thing, in my opinion, a huge hindrance. But the thing is, it's because Epic helped them with the publishing.
Yes, for sure. For sure, I get it. I'm not saying I don't get it, but
no.
It's a huge hindrance, I'd imagine.
There's a lot of people who are like, oh, not on Steam? I'll wait. I'll be like, dude, I don't know what's coming on Steam, my friend. I don't think it is. And like, there's so many people.
It's on consoles as well.
Yes.
Of course, yeah.
So, speaking about Steam, like, I'm actually really surprised that Senua is only on Xbox Game Pass and not even on PC, like Xbox, only on
Wishlist on Steam. I was just about to bring that up, that's interesting.
I'm really interested about that, and I'm wondering if Microsoft, if they're a little bit worried about the fact that, you know, this is their first party studio game that's coming out, where they don't want to run into the problem where Hi-Fi Rush, where, you know, a lot, it was available on PC and on Xbox, and a lot of people just like, well, I have Game Pass, I just download the game. And maybe this is their way of getting some revenue back in a way, where like, okay, well, it's come on Xbox Game Pass. If you own an Xbox, fine. And then, but if you want on PC and people are like, oh, I got my 4090s and like, let me just max this out and see how this game looks and everything. And I feel like this maybe their way of getting money back, because usually it's hand in hand, like, oh, Xbox Game Pass and on PC. And I find it real interesting. Like, they specifically wrote down wishlist on Steam.
Yeah, I do wonder if it's a matter of the messaging, because there's no way to kind of like preload PC Game Pass games, right?
Oh, you can, yeah.
You can?
Yeah. Okay, I did that for Liza P.
Okay, never mind.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, maybe it's just a fact of like, oh, they're not ready, or okay, maybe they're still not ready to push out the PC Game Pass preload, so maybe their messaging is wishlist on Steam if you're on PC and you're excited for this game, or you can preload it on your console. I don't know,
like, it doesn't even show like for you to purchase on, right now I'm on the Xbox application, it doesn't even show for you to buy, it just says see in store and that's it.
So
it's just something that, just, you know, the keywords are very interesting there, so that's for sure. With that being said, another $70 game that came out that I consider a game of the year contender is Prince of Persia Lost Crown. Caboose, did you play this? I haven't played this yet, but
I've been seeing a ton of people praising it online. I saw that Ubisoft Canada had a quote, interestingly, from us.
Maybe just a little number here and there, a little nine out of ten, you know.
I'm gonna have to check this out. I'm seeing a ton of praise. I'm seeing even some people say that this might be like one of those early game of the year contenders. At least it's very, very early, but I mean, similar to Dead Space, right? Last year where that dropped and people were like, if the rest of the year doesn't pan out, this is a game of the year nominee right here, right? So
absolutely,
that's awesome. That's awesome. I'm glad that people are liking the new Prince of Persia. And I guess I'm gonna have to jump in and check it out.
It's the same boat where, like, so for me, the same feeling what Hi-Fi Rush gave me is the same feeling that this game gave me as well. Like, when you play Hi-Fi Rush, you're like, wow, this is amazing and everything. And the same thing with this game, I kind of wish with a fighting game background that you have, Caboose, you absolutely love this game. Because the juggles you can do with this game and different combinations, the different combos you can do as well. Where, like, you know, you can do some XX and hold the Y button for a strong attack or juggle the enemy in the air. I kind of wish this game came with like arcade type of mode where, like, oh, you got this number of combos off of this person.
And I really
feel like that is missing. Or maybe there's like a high score, like, type of thing, like, okay, this is the score I got due to like the combos I did, because you could literally like just like lower sweep someone and they will literally be in midair, launch them in the air, you could jump out, like smack them back down, they'll bounce up off the ground and just keep on wailing on them. Like, this poor guy's like, I just shot one arrow at you, like, please stop, sir, stop killing me. it's wild the stuff you can do, and that is just cool. From like the beginning of the game, like the power-ups you don't even have yet, like you get like power-ups like late, I found like I think like 3 hours in the game or 2 hours in the game, is when you start getting the power. I was like, this is like just your base self, and like those combos you can do, it's absolutely wild. And then when you mix in the power-ups that you get, then like you could do some crazy damage. The game with the music is fantastic. It's the same composer who did Ori, Garth Brooker, or Garth, I can't remember his name.
Cool.
The music is fantastic. Some of the boss fights is absolutely crazy. When you get owned by some of the bosses, for me personally, I didn't feel like, this is so frustrating. What the hell is going on here? You're fighting against one person, okay, one more match. Let me get my run back, you know? It's so much fun.
Because I've seen some people get frustrated by some of the bosses on clips online, but it looks like it's that type of frustration, like you're mentioning, that like, I was so close to beating them.
Run it back. It's so many run backs.
Yeah, that you're like, okay, I got to jump. I got to give one more go.
No, absolutely. That's how I felt. And like, it's just when you fight, you're like, man, that like this fight, so I'm like, it took me like at least 10 or like 10 tries to get it. And once I got it, I was like, man, that was so like epic. Like, I want to like, I hope like eventually down the road, it's going to be like a boss mode. I know when I talked to the producer, when I previewed the game, he wants like speedrunners, and the game is built for that as well. Yeah. And like different shortcuts and everything. So, it's absolutely outstanding. And, even with the, I know you played as well, Steve, so we're going to dive into you for a second there as well. But some of the the platformings, when you get different power-ups, like there's this one like where you get like a second jump. I mean, like I think that was in the trailer. And like you have to like dive down, get the second jump, hold on to this wall, then you do another second. Like, it's wild the stuff you can do with some of the puzzles. I'm like, man, that was really like a lot of fun. Like, I felt like a gymnastic. I was been training for the Olympics for years after playing it. So this was a really fun experience. And I really hope like a lot of people don't skip out on this game. I don't know why this people are just like, oh, this is not my Prince of Persia, I don't want this. I'm like, don't skip out on this. Like, it's like you'll be doing yourself a disservice.
There's too many instances of people writing off games just because it doesn't look like the same game.
The
same three kinds of games that come out every year. Yeah. You know, Steve, me and you were just tweeting about this the other day. I've been seeing a lot of people now finally coming around on Midnight Suns. And that was my first experience. As somebody who exclusively covers superhero games, that was my first experience with a game where I was like, I don't play turn-based strategy games, okay? I was like, this does not look like my cup of tea, but it's Marvel. It's got a bunch of Marvel characters that I really like. Mm-hmm. I'm going to give it a fair shot and just see how I feel. And I remember like, even like the first 2 hours, I was like, I don't know if I'm getting it. And then there was just this like snap where I was like, oh, that's the whole idea here, right? That's what's like addicting about it. And I put like over 100 hours when all was said and done. The DLC was super fun. I am so sad that game flopped. And I guess, yeah, like Prince of Persia in a lot of ways is in a similar position where it doesn't look like a lot of the fan favorite Prince of Persia games, and people are writing it off because of that. But I feel like they shouldn't, because you just, I don't know. For me, it's like, if you know, you do whatever you want with your hard-earned dollars, okay? But if you're gonna play the same third-person action adventure for the rest of your life, I don't know what to tell you, man. You're missing out on a lot of really good games in other genres. And so I don't know, that's why for me, like, I'll definitely check out Prince of Persia. I've never played like a Metroidvania style game, and maybe that might not be my cup of tea going into it. Mm-hmm. But if it works, it works. And this could be, for me, an introduction to a whole new genre of games that I should have been playing this entire time. 100%.
Yeah, that's kind of like me. I'm not like much of a platformer, but just like the way that the story presents itself, the discovery, like seeing doors and gates, being like, wait, how do I get there? And then like 10 minutes later, making yourself like go around some like hoops and like finding like the doors open. It's a really fun game. And I find myself getting like my teeth kicked in by a lot of guards and stuff, but then, you know, you just run back to the tree, you top off on your health and like do it again. And like, it's not like a Skyrim or like a Dark Souls where like you do it again and you want to like punch your freaking console in the face. It's more of like a, no, this is doable, I could do it. And it's just like a really fun experience.
Cool. Yeah. Cool.
Another thing I wanted to mention as well, like the difficulty or the customization you can do with the game. There's obviously you have your standard easy, normal, hard, but like you can actually customize it the way you want.
Yeah.
Like fully in depth. Like, if you want like a longer parry, you could do that. If you want the enemies to hit a little bit harder, like you could do your custom difficulty in this game. So you can just fit it. If you could just set it up the way you want. So if you want, I want enemies to hit me harder, and I want like a short parry window for myself. You could do that in this game. And like, it's really. I'd never seen anything do that. Usually, you just get like the default. Like, this is how we feel the game should be. So this is what you guys get. The fact they're like, yeah, you know what, do whatever you want, like type of thing. And that's really, really a unique spin that they took right there. And I feel like a lot of people, what they do with Ubisoft games, and it's sad because Ubisoft did it to themselves, is that when the game comes out, like 2 weeks later, it's on sale for like $40, you know?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Every single time.
And I feel like that's what people are waiting. If they're like, oh, I'll get it, but I'll wait. I'm like, you should get the game. Like, try the demo and play the game now. That type of thing. That's why maybe they bust out the demo for this game first, and hopefully people try it out. And I believe the save carries over. I'm not too sure, but Steve, I talked out too much time. How much? Like, did you try out the game yourself or?
Yeah, and this game rips. I think this is like the first must-play game of 2024, off to a rock-solid start of just really high-caliber games. I think, pairing this with what we talked about last year with Assassin's Creed Mirage, like Ubisoft is now on this trend of delivering sizable games that last, 20 to 25 hours, and that's exactly what I got out of Prince of Persia here, where I had never played a 2D Prince of Persia game. I had, like, a lot of people only played the 3D games that came out like with the original Xbox and 360 and stuff like that. So I was very skeptical about this one, because I was like, this isn't my Prince of Persia. I want like a new Prince of Persia game. I feel like we're long overdue for that. But immediately getting into this world, checking out the Metroidvania gameplay, just the progression system of unlocking new abilities that not only serve the traversal but combat as well, and then feeds into like every boss battle, where the boss battle is designed to test your skills using the powers you've already unlocked, is just so brilliant. And it just has such a great gameplay loop of like, hey, here are all these biomes. They all look different. They all give you like different enemies and puzzles to explore and to complete. There's so many like collectibles to find and everything. I think, yeah, they really went above and beyond to deliver something that is of very high quality in terms of being a Metroidvania. It's so funny, Caboose, you're talking about, you're not being very, very well versed in the genre. I love Metroidvanias, but it never really resonates to the point where like it sticks in my mind where I'm like, I am deep into this genre, until I return to one where I come back to a game like this, or a game like, Ori or something like that. I'm like, this is so up my alley. This is so my jam. Yeah. That, I mean, like the moment that you start playing and you're like, oh, I see like a ledge that I can barely get to, and I know there's a double jump somewhere in this damn game, and I'm like, I'm coming back for you. And then 5 hours later, I go over that ledge, I start exploring more of it, and I'm like, oh, now there's a door that I can't get through. Okay, I know I'm coming back to this. I love that gameplay loop. That progression system is so satisfying. The one thing I'm gonna say now, everyone knows I love my achievements. I was going for the 100% before launch. Two are bugged for me, and I couldn't be more sad. Last two are so bugged for me that there's one where you have to collect all the Soma tree petals in order to like max out your health. Okay. I have found every single treasure in this game, and there is no Soma tree petal for me.
Oh boy.
Oh no.
And one of the other one is completing all of the side missions. One side mission is just borked. It just won't progress. It won't let me complete it, even though I've done the objective. I just have to turn in the thing that this pirate is looking for, and I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
He just keeps saying the same game, same dialogue over and over again. I'm like, oh. So I'm hoping that they can release a patch. I know they released.
I know it's supposed to be a day one patch. Yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't address. Oh, doesn't address that at all. Okay. Right. Yeah. So hopefully in the coming weeks, because I have seen a lot of people talk about the one side mission not being able to complete. So hopefully they listen. Hopefully they're able to address that. But otherwise, this is a really great game, and I do think that. I hate bringing this up, like the price point. I think honestly it is kind of like a detractor here, where especially in Canada it's $70. And yeah, that's all. I'm not telling anyone how to spend their money, what to spend their money on or anything, but I do think that that's kind of a big ask, especially with, you know, our current economy of like, do you want to buy this game day one just to be part of the conversation? Or like you said, Marcel, Ubisoft always puts their games out on sale in the coming weeks, months, and stuff like that. I don't see there being a reason to buy this day one. Mm. I think this is a must play. Like, definitely get around to it. But if $70 isn't within your means to play this right now, I don't see why you shouldn't be able to just wait for a sale. Because I think the quality is there. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. I think that there's a lot of high quality here. But I think the $70 was a little bit too much of an ask. Maybe like $50 to $60. There's definitely a no-brainer at that point. But just because Canadian, you know, the currency sucks and everything like that, seeing a $70 price tag on a game like this,
and
it gives me pause.
Something like that. And I definitely agree with the price tag. It is a bit like much for a game. I don't know. It could probably even be like $60 or something like that. Yeah. You know. But like, I feel like if people just wait and the sales don't look good, it will kind of like, well, don't, that's it. No more creativity for you guys type of vibes, you know?
That's where I struggle, where it's like, I want people to go out and buy this game, support the developers, because they do awesome stuff. They did Rayman. They did they do great stuff. And I definitely want Ubisoft to kind of have a fire under their ass where they're like, oh, we want smaller games. We want Prince of Persia back. Yeah. We want all this stuff. But at the same time, I think
I want Immortals Phoenix Rising too, damn it. Come on.
Yeah. It was so weird that they called it, like, the group is called Immortals. I was like, what are you doing, Ubisoft? Yeah. You tried this already.
So would you say that this would have been a better, like, $50, $60 kind of game? Like,
I would even say, like, $60.
I would say that's, 60 and 40 for US. Yeah. That would have been, like, a good price point, I would say. Yeah.
Okay. Like $70, just shy of like a AAA. I just think that, you know, comparatively, you see something like even Cyberpunk, and it's like, okay, there's a disparity there. Not in terms of quality or the amount of work that goes into a game like Prince of Persia. Yeah. I just think in our current economy, when you look at people like having to, you know, fork out $40 for two chicken breasts, it's kind of difficult to be like, oh yeah, play this 30-hour experience.
Persia that, or chicken? Yeah, exactly. Are we eating or are we going to play a game? I don't know.
But again, I'm no one to tell you where to spend your money. No, if you see enough quality here, definitely buy into it, because I don't think that you're going to be steered wrong at all.
You will not be disappointed, especially with for me, it took me like, I'll say 20, I think it was around 20 hours to get to the end. I also got sidetracked as well. But like, I think it's a 25 or 28-hour game. So you're getting a good chunk
as
well. And then knowing that if you're a speedrunner enthusiast, then like, definitely pick up this game. Like, you will, like, there's different, like, there's like little oopsies that I did. I was able to like go through like a wall. I'm like, I should not be on this side of the wall, but I did it somehow. The enemy hit me so hard, I went and the camera couldn't follow fast enough. I somehow skipped through that wall. I'm like, well, I'm on this side now. So I was able to skip some parts. So there's definitely some like ways to like speedrun this game.
They're definitely going to exploit that 100%.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. So,
but yeah, I roll credits at 25 hours. I got, you know, I got stonewalled by progression at 30 hours. So,
yeah.
Man.
But
nice. It is overall, like, it's a fun game. I'm still very early on. Okay. So like, story wise, I'm having fun with just like learning the personalities of like everyone in the group. There's a lot of like little funny moments. It's not like the deepest narrative, but I think overall it's just like a really fun visual time. So I'm looking forward to it.
There is one thing I'll bring up, and I don't think you're there yet, Sammy, and it's not a spoiler, but when you get there, Sammy, you'll know. But Steve, when you did, there was one voice actress, I should say, did not sound like a human being whatsoever.
Oh, there's definitely an AI
In this game. Yeah. It literally sounded like the bot that you have for like Twitch streaming, who's reading like a text at TTS. I was like, is this real?
The voices that do the Nintendo Direct, where it's like, oh, and hey, why don't you check out this game from this studio? I was like, this is so weird. It's uncanny. Yeah, no, I do think that there were actually reports saying that that character is confirmed to be an AI.
AI? Okay.
Okay.
Because there was
it was like a real person, and they're like, damn it, that's just the way I sound.
This is me.
You're never going to work ever again.
Never again. Because I was listening to them, like, does this sound like someone's like donating to me right now? Like, I don't know what's going on. It's felt so weird. But, you know, definitely everyone should pick up the game. It's a lot of fun. It's available today, actually, the day of we're recording this. So definitely pick it up. And yeah, I think that's pretty much recovering. Caboose, what is the rest of your week looking like?
There is some sort of stream tomorrow for Suicide Squad where they're going to go over the end game. They're doing it with, with some, they're doing it with some notable streamers, Dr. Lupo, Shroud, and Tarek, I think his name is Tarek. So I'm looking forward to seeing that. I want to see what the end game is going to look like for the game and what they're presenting there. They did like a big Discord Q&A the other day and talked about some features that I'm really excited about. Not to take the conversation in this direction, but they talked about this feature called Social Squad, where let's say I leveled up my Captain Boomerang and him decked out and all the bells and whistles. You can take my Captain Boomerang and put them a part of your squad and then use my Captain Boomerang. And then if you play and get rewards and you get like a new legendary item, when I log back on, I'll have gotten that legendary item.
That's so cool.
That's cool.
I think this is something I'm so surprised they hadn't talked about this sooner or put this in any form of marketing to have left this to be something you announce in text form 2 weeks before the game comes out is absurd, in my opinion. This is such a cool, like, cooperative thing. Even if this game was like something you wanted to jump in and play solo, this adds so much to your experience because if I want to focus on one member of the squad, I can just social squad the other members. You can even go into the leaderboards and take like a top player's Harley Quinn and put them into your squad.
So you're like and literally like download like a cool. ghost card. Like, well, that's so cool.
It's like using the Halo 3 like social like share system where you can download but essentially with the different members of the Suicide Squad. Now it sounds really cool in theory. I wonder how it's gonna look in execution. But anyways. There's a lot of like really exciting things starting to pop up now for Suicide Squad. So, I mean, they got this big stream tomorrow for the end game. On Monday, they got another insider episode dropping that's probably going to go over the post-launch plans and DLC stuff.
Joker?
I'm hoping we get some sort of a roadmap. Yeah, it looks like Joker's going to be coming to the game in some way.
All right.
So I'm hoping we get like a roadmap. I'm hoping things look promising. I don't know. There's things that I'm genuinely looking forward to with this game. And now that they lifted the NDA on that alpha and so many people are speaking more positively on it, it's a very vindicating thing for me because I feel like I was taking crazy pills when I was talking about how smooth the gunplay is and how much fun the traversal is, but a lot of people are sharing that sentiment. So I'm looking forward to the game. I have my gripes. We'll see how it goes on January 30th. Outside of that, not much else going on. Still waiting for some more MK DLC to drop. Still running my tournament Champions of the Realms every Wednesday and Friday.
Hell yeah.
And that's it. I mean, some big games on the horizon for the superhero genre. We don't know when they're going to be dropping, but hopefully sooner rather than later so that I have a job.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah, the Suicide Squad crowd, especially on YouTube, is...
Oh my God, the comments, dude.
I don't know how you deal with it, man.
This is the unfortunate reality as well for that game is there may be some stuff in there that is genuinely great, but people have just written it off at this point. And it's unfortunate, too, because there's a lot of creators I've watched that talk about the game that are, it's just full of misinformation and assumptions. And I think that's so unfair to criticize a game off of something you assume is going to happen rather than what's being presented in front of you. But
I think that like is ripe for like a whole conversation onto itself because I've been so frustrated and furious at how the community has handled the misinformation or assumptions of what this game is without even having played the finished product. And it's I caught flack for it this week where I just said like if you're not willing to play the game, if you're not willing to invest time into the game, I don't think that you should have a voice in being able to criticize it because all you're doing is making assumptions and a bunch of people are push back on it. I totally understand if you want to be that way, but like a lot of people are just making such inherent like comments that are just not true, just factually not true about the game. Like you can literally look up points on like how this game was made and stuff like that. It's just so frustrating to see how a narrative can get taken away from a studio when so many people are just trying to make a good game. Whether or not it ends up being a good game, I still think that it should be, you know, we should give them the opportunity to at least present it before right. saying, well, oh, we're just going to write it off completely.
It's and you know what? Like, there's things that I don't like too, right? Oh, like, I'm very vocal. Mm-hmm. I was yelling up and down the streets about the Always Online thing, and I still don't think that that's going to be great, but they're bringing an offline mode, thankfully, at some point this year. So I'm looking forward to that being something that's going to be available because, yeah, I don't want Kevin Conroy's last performance as Batman to be something that gets locked away someday, right? So I'm glad, again, they made a change on that. I still have issues, though. I mean, I've talked up and down about the sensory overload. I still think that's an issue. That was an issue that I brought up when I played the alpha. And so, like, I had to reiterate that point when I had gotten my hands on through the official invite by Warner Brothers. But yeah, there's plenty of complaints and plenty of issues that I have. I don't think it's all sunshine and rainbows, but I also don't like as well the complaint that it's not what we wanted it to be, therefore it's bad. Yeah. I get it. I wanted a Justice League game. I wanted a Superman game, a Green Lantern game, a game for the Flash, right? I would have loved Rocksteady to give the Arkham flavor, the Arkham treatment to another superhero. But if what they wanted to do with the Suicide was the Suicide Squad, if that's the game they wanted to make, then that's the game I'm going to be judging. I'm not going to judge it saying it's not the game I wanted, so it's bad now. Right. You know, if this is it, and if they do these characters justice, if they service this world for these characters, then okay, cool. Yeah. Let's critique it for that.
And I think that's the big word, critique. Like, provide, you know, constructive criticism versus just, hey.
I would just prefer to live in that world versus imagine. This thing sucks, you know.
Critical thinking is not allowed.
Nope. Yeah. But I say all this while also saying that, like, I understand where consumers come from because not everyone's just going to sit there and spend $70 and be like, okay, well, let's see, right? Like, some people are going to want to check out reviews. Some people are going to say, you know what, this doesn't look like it's what I want to play. But especially if you're a creator, okay, and especially if you want to present yourself as almost essentially a gaming journalist in video form, I feel like you are responsible for giving every game that comes out a fair shot and seeing how it works for you, you know? And if it doesn't, then I think that you should be very, you know, constructive in your criticism. I saw somebody the other day. This is so frustrating. I saw a content creator the other day. I don't want to bring up names because I'm not going to try and cause drama here.
No.
But they were complaining about how in the game, you have an objective marker. Mm-hmm. And if you're playing with people online, you yourself can hit square or X if you're on Xbox, whatever, to activate the objective. And if you're not there, you have 30 seconds to get there. And they were complaining about that functionality. They were like, well, that kind of undoes the traversal, which is the big point. It's like, every co-op game has this. Yep. There's a circle. Yep. You got to get there. Otherwise, you can just grief your teammates. You know, if you're matching up with somebody random online, they can just never come to the objective marker. And then the mission never starts, you know?
I guarantee that person that has a gripe has never experienced that before. So they're taking their perspective, not analyzing it from, you know, an objective standpoint that this is good for the game, this is good for all players that are getting into this. They're just basing it off their subjective experience. They're like, I don't like this thing. I see so many times, specifically with Suicide Squad.
Yeah, and I saw some people have issue too with there's certain moments in the game where you're kind of standing around and listening to characters talk over your intercoms. Listen, it slows down the pace of the game. There's no doubt about it. But I'm just going to say one thing. And if you play the Batman Arkham franchise, you'll know why this even exists in Suicide Squad. Okay. Mm-hmm. Oracle. Like, every Arkham game has the stop and talk for 5 minutes thing. If it wasn't a problem in Batman Arkham Asylum, City and Night, why is it all of a sudden such a glaring issue in Suicide Squad? You know, it should have been a problem in those games for it to still be a problem now. Yeah. And I feel like this is another one of those instances where it's like everything. If you don't like this game, all of it has to suck. Like, it all has to be bad. There's no like, I don't really know about this. There's no like, you know what? This is kind of good or that works, but all this other stuff doesn't. It's just that I already don't like this game. So it all has to be bad. There's no nuance in opinions anymore.
Again, it all comes down to exactly what you said, where it is people who want to be, you know, game critics or content creators or anything like that, not being able to separate subjective critiques versus objective critiques, because we can go into a Suicide Squad and nitpick the things that genuinely don't look that great or perform that great. I think the hub just looks a little too
the UI is too busy.
But that is a objective point of view, where a lot of people now are just saying, oh well, why doesn't King Shark, why isn't he a brawler, why does he have a gun? Well, could you imagine if three of your friends all want to, or you're in a group where all of you guys want to have guns and you get stuck with King Shark and he just has to that breaks the game at that point, I would say
that it would break the game if it weren't for the fact that you can play as four Captain Boomerangs and four Harley Quinns and whatever the likes, right? Like I had the point of wishing that King Shark was a brawler character simply for the fact that it is an RPG and he could fit the role of a melee based character that you can create melee based builds around,
right?
But yeah, like I'm not gonna say that it's not that, so it sucks. You know, exactly. Like I'm not gonna say that I wanted it to be this, so the fact that it's that is bad. You know, like if the idea here was that all four characters were gonna have guns and you use guns, I'm gonna critique the gunplay. How does that work? How does that feel? Yeah. Is it satisfying? Is it good as a looter shooter? And there's some things that are genuinely great about it. Unfortunately, though, again, like this game, it's never gonna see the light of day, because so many people have written it off and so many people are not even willing to give it a fair shot. And it's to the point where, we're just nitpicking every tiny little detail. I was blown away when I heard people complaining about how you stop and talk sometimes, when that is like a staple of the Arkham franchise.
Like, there's a story in the game, though.
Arkham game has probably 2 hours of gameplay allocated to walking around with your hand over your ear, listening to other people talk to you before you can start gliding around again. I've always found it an issue, because if I'm Batman and I can hear you in my ear, why would I not just be gliding around and do what I want to do? That's what works so well in the Spider-Man games. You have those phone conversations, right? And you can still go swinging and have fun in the city, right? They don't do those in the Arkham games. That's just kind of the Rocksteady style, and they stuck with it in Suicide Squad. Yeah. If you didn't complain about it before, complaining about it now makes you seem very disingenuous.
Well, I'm curious, is most of the discourse you're seeing, is it on Twitter?
I mean, Twitter is a bubble for sure. Mm-hmm. But again, I've seen some other content creators and some other people who have reviewed the game give not a fair shot. I will say, though, I think a lot of people really harped on IGN incorrectly, in my opinion.
I agree.
I think that Destin made a lot of good points. Mm-hmm. I think that some things were wrong, like him complaining about going into like hazards in the geometry and getting knocked out of the air. Like, I thought that was silly, you know, like you walked into an environmental hazard and it knocked you out of the air. it's not a big deal. It's okay. Or like the Flash hit you with a lightning bolt and you got knocked out. It happens. Right. But like the Flash being too fast thing, that became like this whole big meme. I think that was super unfair on Destin, because that's not what he was trying to say. Because at the end of the day, it should be a video game, right? It shouldn't literally be, this is comic accurate, so you just can't shoot him ever, right? Like that shouldn't be the difference. Case. There should be a difference
between, you know, sticking to the source material and then providing like a fun experience.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
That is a factor of like looking at something and saying like, okay, is the gameplay fun? Is this functional? And if you're not able to provide, if the answer is no, well, you have to be honest about it in your preview.
Yeah. And on the other hand, though, IGN has reposted that negative review about Suicide Squad, I think maybe like 6 times. Yeah. I was told by an IGN rep that it's because they have like an automated thing that puts out their most liked or most engaged tweets like several times. I just think that the Suicide Squad instance is particularly interesting.
Do you think if it was open beta, it would have softened the blow a little bit?
Yes. Yeah. If that alpha test was stripped of its NDA, I think there would have really surprised WB Games, but I think that they were worried. They were worried about what the opinion was going to be. And also at the same time, it's an alpha. So you're bound to run into bugs and glitches and issues. Yeah. And so something like that, it's not fairly uncommon practice for things like that to be NDA'd, right?
Yeah.
But then I think internally they started to notice that some people were definitely not going to follow that NDA. You know, random Twitter user 123 was not going to be like, oh, I guess I can't talk about it, you know? So a lot of people ended up providing their opinions, and the general consensus was positive. Mm-hmm. A lot of people were very positive about it. And then post our hands-on impressions, there were plenty of developers even, and as well, you know, people, Destin himself was saying, hey, we should lift the NDA. Let everyone who got their chance to play this game to be able to talk about it. And then, yeah, a ton of positive impressions and thoughts started to come out of the woodworks, but it might be too little too late, considering it's like 2 weeks away. Yeah. I don't know what the pre-order sales are looking like. People are pointing out that it's like at the top of the pre-order page for PlayStation. I don't know if that means that it's getting the most pre-orders out of all those games listed, or if PlayStation just has like a marketing deal with WB Games on this one. But we'll see. We'll see. I want it to be good. At the end of the day, I will never, ever, ever hope for a game to be bad. I know it's a live service. I know that some people think that that comes with shady business practices. If that ends up being the case, I will be the first one to say something about it. But if it's not, if it's got a generous battle pass, if it's got, you know, lower priced microtransactions and skins aren't $60 or whatever the hell they were doing with Marvel's Avengers, then I hope it does well. And I hope that there's some longevity here and that people play it for months and years to come and that they have several years of content added into it.
Yeah.
Anyways, super long tangent.
It needed to be said, honestly. So
I'm hoping on Monday that we get a roadmap and that there can be some sort of excitement created for fans about what's to come after the game comes out later this month.
That'll be huge.
Because like it also falls in the same thing with Prince of Persia. A lot of people were upset, like, because like the character was in Persian. I'm like, what are you, like, what does that even mean? Yeah. I don't understand. Yeah. It's like it's just telling a different story. Like, it doesn't have to follow the ropes. Like, well, he's not Persian, he's not the prince. I'm out. I don't want to play the game.
The prince is there.
The prince is right there. Like, what do you mean? Yeah. So I don't know. It's very silly. People just need to relax. All right. Like, just, I don't know. Yeah. Sammy, how about you? What's going on?
You know, I'm playing Hellblade now this weekend.
Nice. Oh.
Yeah.
Best $3 spent, that's for sure.
Honestly, true. Other than that, I'm going to try to get something out for Prince of Persia on probably my Instagram. So if you happen to follow me, if you don't happen to follow me, I'm at Peter Spence almost everywhere. So yeah, just that.
There you go. Steve Monday, how about you?
I don't have that much going on. We talked about it before we started recording today, but I'm really interested in this Pal World game. It's Pokemon with guns. So I think I'm going to invest some time into that this week, and I'm going to provide a nice little report for you guys next episode, because this game feels like a fever dream. I don't believe it's real, but hey, it's coming out at the time you all are listening to this. It's going to be a game. I'll say that. I'm confident in that it's going to be
a game.
You have definitely had to let us know how it is for you when we record next week. That's for sure.
Yep.
When I saw the trailer, I'm like, this can't be real. There's no way.
No. How are they not getting sued by Nintendo and the Pokemon company right now? Right?
But, hey. You gave Pikachu a gun. What's going on here?
Yeah.
There's definitely some creatures there. I'm like, that's clearly a Pokemon.
Right? Yeah.
I'm sure Nintendo made that Pokemon already. Like, what are you doing? As for me, I'm just like, I'm actually been playing a lot of Mario Wonder, trying to like wrap up that game and try to get as much as the Wonder Seeds and everything. I might dive into some more Prince of Persia, try to like 100% it. I really, really have enjoyed that game. There's certain parts where like you get some coins. I was like, I'm coming back later. Another thing I want to also remind people as well, they also have this great feature of, there's like a picture mode where you can take a screenshot of an area. So if you're like, oh, I need to come back here for this reason, take a screenshot. And like it will actually put the picture on the map, and like you can see why you want to go back there. So that's another cool feature as well. But this thing low key. Like, a part of me wants to do a Yakuza like marathon, but that's gonna take me 68.
Oh my god,
that's gonna take me 68 days. Cause I never played any of the Yakuza games. I played Lost Judgment, but I never played Yakuza. But I don't think I have 68 days in me to beat all these games. So
wait, is that 68 days like front to back
from zero worth of content? From zero to the current one?
Jesus, oh boy,
and that's if I do 4 hours a day. So. Yeah.
Oh my god.
Just do like a 72-hour live stream or so.
That's not enough. That's not even enough. That's like only like the first two games at least.
I was gonna say, yeah.
Oh, man. Anyway, it's something I'm considering. I'll see you and everything. And we'll see all of you next week. Have a good one, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.